Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and started working in his family's grocery store at age 12. He earned a degree in architecture from Lawrence Technological University and began a firm at age 26. The firm has designed hundreds of buildings, including the Birmingham Theater, Townsend Hotel, Royal Park Hotel, and Shenandoah Country Club. He's one of the youngest people in history to be named a Fellow of the American Institute of Architects. His name, Victor Sirocki. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Victor Sirocki. Victor, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Thank you, Jack. It's an honor to be here.
What if we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. My father is Yelda Sirocki, and my mother is Zarifa Sirocki. They were immigrants to this country. They came from Iraq, the Chaldeans, which I am a Chaldean, came from northern Iraq. And people say, why did the Chaldeans come to Detroit? Well, there was a depression around the world back in the early 20s and early 30s. And of course, the depression even was felt in third world countries like Iraq. The Chaldeans were from northern Iraq. In fact, most of the Chaldeans in the Detroit area come from a town, a small village called Tel Kaif. And you probably don't know Tel Kaif because it's quite small, but you may have heard of Mosul, especially with all the activity going on in Iraq. And Mosul is the largest city next to Tel Kaif. So my father was the youngest of five brothers. And they were farmers and merchants back in Tel Kaif. And they needed to raise some money. So my father was the most educated of his five brothers. In fact, he had gone to high school. It's very rare in those days for a young man in that time, in that part of the country, to even go to high school. So they said, we're going to send you to the United States. We want you to help the family, raise some money, and of course, the idea to send back money to the family. So Detroit was picked because of Henry Ford and the shot heard around the world. That's why the Chaldeans came to Detroit. So the ambition was to come to Detroit, and he came across the ocean and went through Ellis Island and eventually made his way to Detroit. But, you know, the Chaldeans never got into the automotive industry. They were always independent merchants. So my father worked for another Chaldean gentleman who had come a couple of years before him in a small market. And that's really the beginning of the Chaldeans coming to the Detroit area and opening up the markets. And today, still, many Chaldeans own markets in the city. But my father worked for 3 years. In fact, a cute story is the first year he worked every day. He was 19 years old. So after working 1 year in the store, the owner of the store said, Yelda, you've worked every single day. And you know, the work ethic back then was to work morning till night. My father used to get up at 6 o'clock and he'd work till almost midnight. Go home, go to sleep, get up and come back to work. So the store owner says, I want tomorrow, is you've been here 1 year, I want you to have a day off. And my father said, really, you're kidding me. He goes, nope, I really want you to have a day off. He goes, that's fantastic. So that afternoon, my father is thinking about what he's going to do on his day off. The day comes, he has coffee in the morning, has a breakfast, starts to think about what he's going to do. Doesn't really know what to do because all he's done is work. About 10 o'clock in the morning, he shows up at the store and asks the owner, can I come back to work, please? And he says, this is your day off. He goes, but I don't know anything else but to work. Can I please work? And he says, yes, of course, you could work. So, you know, that was the life that our parents had. And after working 3 or 4 years, my father raised quite a bit of money and was able to send money home every month back to his brothers and to his family. And he eventually went back to Iraq thinking that he would probably stay there. But, you know, once you've had a taste of opportunity and a taste of this great country, he had to come back to the United States. So he married my mother. My mother was 16 years old when she got married. And he actually came here first for about 6 months and sent for her later. And when my mother came, that was the beginning of their life in the United States. And eventually my father owned his own store and did a very good job in the markets. And he owned a couple of different markets over the years. And that's how I started working in the supermarkets myself, because our whole family did, quite frankly. You know, my older sisters, even though they went to college eventually, they started working in the stores. And that was a family tradition. And that is a very common tradition for many of the Chaldeans still today. The father will start the business and the children will come into the business and work it.
And you started at age 12.
Well, you know, we all started young, and I used to go with my father. In fact, I remember going down the street and getting him always a cup of coffee in the morning, because it was a nice little coffee shop. And back then, the coffee came in these little glass bottles. And I used to put cream in the coffee for him and bring it back to the store. Now, at age 12, I did a little bit of everything. I swept the floors, and I used to, you know, walk the aisles and make sure that all the products were there, and work in the back room. So I worked my way up through the store. But, you know, my father, I was the youngest of five children, so my father was older than myself by quite a few years. And he eventually sold the store. So by the time I was about 15, he had sold the store. But I started working still in the stores for my cousins. And I worked at Town Square Market, and I used to work all the way through high school in the supermarkets, after school and on weekends. And, you know, again, that was the way we did things.
Victor, when did you first realize you wanted to be an architect?
Well, my first exposure to it was when my father was going to have a house built. I still remember it was in Beverly Hills on a street called Embassy. And he hired an architect. In fact, the architect's name was Michael Nalu, who was a Chaldean architect. And Mike had designed the house. And I used to see Mike come to my father's house and go over the plans with him. And he would show us the way doors were designed and roofs were designed. And I really got to understand the process of how drawings ultimately became reality. And I thought it was very interesting. And I was in high school back then at the time. Unfortunately, my father never built the house. He, in fact, got so far as to clear the site, stake the house. And once he had actually cleared it, he changed his mind. He says, you know what? I'm not so sure I like this lot as much as I thought I did. So he didn't continue with that process. But I remember the experience of him working with an architect. And that really was the ambition for me to follow that path.
We're talking to Victor Soroki, who went on to earn an architectural degree from Lawrence Tech. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Victor Soroki, who at age 43 became one of the youngest people in history to be named a fellow of the American Institute of Architects. Quite an honor.
Thank you.
When you got your architectural degree, so many of our brightest, best people decide to leave. Architects want to go to Chicago, New York, design buildings in those major cities. Why have you stayed?
Well, it's a good question, Jack. And, you know, opportunities can exist anywhere. But for me, being a young man who grew up in Detroit and being raised in the Chaldean community, this is my home. So at least I'm somebody who's known in our community, in our own home. And I really saw it as an opportunity to start my career. If I had gone to Chicago, quite frankly, I would have worked for a firm, maybe a large firm, and I would have been one of 50 people, one of 100 people. And I would have really been working on details for many, many years. And, you know, growing up in the Chaldean community and talking a little bit about my father's experience, we were always merchants. We were always in business for ourselves. I always saw myself as an architect in business under my own firm. So I really wanted to stay in our community, and I saw it as an opportunity to start my own firm, and that's really what I've done, and I've continued to do that.
You actually started the firm at age 26 in 1984. How did you go about getting the first few projects?
Well, actually, I had just gotten married when we started. In fact, my wife Michelle and I, who Michelle is also Chaldean, started to work together in the office. And we started in a very small office, just the two of us. She was the receptionist, she was the bookkeeper, and I did the architectural work. But again, through the network of people that we knew, the friends we had, we started out doing very small jobs. I did additions, I did garages, I did work for Toys R Us, I would add a vestibule here, a back door here, whatever it took, we did. And you know what? We were very happy to do that because we knew it was going to lead us to bigger and better things.
You had to learn to sell, or otherwise you go out of business. How did you learn to sell? How does someone learn to sell?
I think growing up in a family, talking about business every day around the dinner table, doing that with my father, my father-in-law, doing it on Sundays, you learn what salesmanship is about. And it's growing up in a household that taught me that. But beyond that, it was a challenge. And in fact, at a young age, when you're 26, 27 years old, and you're looking to do a fairly large commission, it's difficult to sell that job because many people look at your age and they say, you're young, can you handle this job? And of course, we have to convince them we could. And that was always a challenge. And we tried to make sure that they had confidence in us. We tried to assemble a good team. We said, give us the opportunity, give us the chance, and they did. And of course, one job led to another, and the success of one would bring us to another.
One of the many things I marvel about you is every time I'm around you, you just have this sense. There used to be a commercial, Allstate. Ed Reamer, you're in good hands with Allstate. Victor, you just have this style about you of putting people at ease. How did you get that?
I think it was probably given to me from my mother. My mother is a very relaxed and calm and patient person. And you know, I like to think that I'm a good listener. And so I always ask myself, why is this client coming to me? And what's the ambition of this client? And I try to listen and fulfill their agenda. So, you know, I try to tell people, look, we're here to do a good job. We want to enjoy the process. Design can be a very fun experience, and it should be a fun and pleasant experience. So let's relax. Let's enjoy the process. Let's get a good building built, whether it's a home or a commercial building or an institutional building, and let's see the success that comes out of it.
How does one learn to be a great listener?
I think you just got to sit back and let your clients talk. And when they talk, we take notes. And I try to observe what is really important to them. And many times I'll ask them questions, just like you're asking me questions. What's important to them? What's their agenda? What's their budget? What's their time frame? And you know, design is not magical, it's a process. And part of the process is listening. And you learn that also in school. You listen to your instructors, you try to understand the program, you observe the environment around you, looking at the streets, the scale, the neighborhood, the influence of other buildings around you. So you're listening even architecturally. You're listening to the neighborhood, to the community. And, you know, listening to our clients is very important to us because, you know what, ultimately these buildings are for our clients. Yes, I'm the architect, and I'll be part of the vehicle that'll get them there. But they're just as much a part of the design process as we are, and these buildings are for them.
Another thing I marvel about you is your loyalty factor is off the charts, whether it's your family, the Chaldean community, the Jesuits who helped raise you, Lawrence Tech, the city of Birmingham. Why are you so loyal?
Jack, you have to be loyal. We're a product of our environment, and we have to remember the good people that brought us up, who brought us here, who got us to these successful places. And you know, I'm proud to be a member of this community. I'm proud to be Chaldean. I'm proud to be a Detroiter. I'm proud to have graduated from Lawrence. I am thrilled that I had an education from the Jesuits, both in grade school and in high school, and I never forget those things. So why shouldn't we reflect the goodness in people and the good part of our community?
It's 1982. Victor graduated from Lawrence Technological University 2 years before. and it was celebrating its 50th anniversary. On that occasion, the university published a list of the 20 most outstanding graduates in 50 years. The youngest member? Victor Sirocki. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Victor Sirocki. Victor, you're very high on giving back, loyalty, teammanship. But so many of our young people today, two words, me and now. What do you say to them?
Well, you know, whatever profession you choose, and my profession being architecture, is an important profession. And it's a profession that does give back to the community. And that's a nice experience that we get to enjoy as architects. But every profession has opportunities to give back to the community. And when you are fortunate enough to have some successes, you have to step back and say, it's time to give back. You have to participate. That's our requirement. It's not just a privilege, it's something we should do. And you know, the problem is many times young people, they've talked about the me generation now. In fact, I was on the plane the other day and I've got two young children, Alexander and Adriana. Alexander is 16, Adriana is 14. And they're listening to their iPods. And I'm reading an article about the iPod generation. And here we are, probably the most educated community in history, the most connected with all of the internet and technology. And yet, in many ways, we're disconnected because we have so much technology. I tell the architects in my office, email is a wonderful thing. It's a great opportunity. But pick up the phone and talk to the clients. Talk to the contractors. People, there's nothing more beautiful than speaking to a human voice. And people want to have that personal experience. So the same's happening with the iPod generation. We talk about it. And we say, you know, here they're listening to the music and they're not being connected. They're not conversing. It's the same issue of watching TV too much. So we need to participate. We need to help others who are not as fortunate. And we need to bring up young people to also get involved in their communities.
If a young person thinks that he or she would like to be an architect, what advice would you give them?
Number one, it's a great profession, a very rewarding profession. And if they are really interested in it, go visit an architect's office. Go meet some architects. Observe the environment around you. Architecture is part of our lives every day. Look at your home, look at your buildings, look at your neighborhood, look at the community you live in, and start to think about the things you like and the things you don't like. Because you know what? Everybody can make a difference. And if you want to be a good architect and you want to participate in buildings and participate in your community, you can make a difference as well. So it's a great profession, very rewarding. It's difficult. There's a lot of time involved. It doesn't happen overnight, but it's one that I would encourage. And I hope that my children go into it.
When we come back, we'll ask Victor about how you go about doing things first class, always. And I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Victor Sirocki. Victor, for the people that are just starting a book club, a cheerleading group, a prayer study group, a business, the tendency is when it gets really successful, then we can afford to do things in a first-class manner. Yet they never then get successful. Talk about how you go about starting off something and doing it first-class.
Well, in architecture, some people maybe think first-class is gold and granite and stainless steel. And that sounds expensive. But really, starting first class is starting the process the right way. You can design a first-class facility, a first-class building, a beautiful building, and it does not need to be gilt in gold. So many times, it's not just dollars and money. It's really an attitude of saying, as a team, our owner, our clients, the architects, the engineers, the contractors, our agenda is to build a first-class product. And you know, there's some projects that command a higher dollar value than others. It's just that way. But we always try to raise the bar. So when we start design, we start out the right way. If we have an opportunity to use very fine materials and the budget allows it and the use requires it, then we're going to do it. And we're always going to select the best products and the best materials for our clients. And we show our clients all those details. We show them the stones and the glass and the tiles, so that they understand all the aspects of this building. So really, it's an attitude. It isn't just about dollars. It's something that you can accomplish many times on a minimal budget. In fact, one of the awards we have in our office is an award for low budget, small design. And every time an owner sees that award, he says, that's the one I want to win.
Speaking of attitude, for those of us that travel, we see area after area booming in other states. There's a can-do attitude. There's a positiveness. Yet in this state, tough times, how do we get a can-do attitude back here?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, there's opportunities in every area. And even in Detroit, in the Detroit area, there are opportunities. Things are going on, maybe not to the magnitude that we see in Chicago or New York or Florida, but, you know, we need to change the process by the way we do things. And we need to have government involved and private business involved. And that's the way it happens in all these other cities. Government has to be proactive. They have to encourage. They have to build incentives. They have to make the process of getting a building done easier and better and faster. Sometimes the red tape will kill a project, and it's true. I've been involved in projects that take years to pull together before we even start construction. So that's the first step. The second is to have an attitude of we can do things. We have some magnificent corporations here. We've got all the talent here. We've got the people. We've got to start building buildings that are respectful to the environment we live in. You know, Jack, if you go to New York or you go to San Francisco or Chicago, those cities have great architecture. And you say, how come they have great architecture and maybe Detroit doesn't have as great architecture? Because the public and the community demands it. And our community should demand it as well. There's no reason we should be any less than those communities. Our architects are talented. We know how to design buildings. Our clients need to instill that ambition in us. And the public should demand it. If the public demands it, the owners will build it.
You've been all over the world. What single building has had the greatest influence on you?
Well, it's a building I just recently visited, in fact. And Michelle and I were on our way to Morocco. And on the way to Morocco, we stopped at Barcelona. I've always wanted to see Barcelona because I know it's a beautiful city. And I love Art Nouveau architecture. And Barcelona has many great examples. In fact, there's a well-known architect who was born in the late 18th century. His name was Antonio Gaudí. You've probably seen many books on him. They say Gaudí. And he was an architect practicing in Barcelona. And he started a church in the late 1800s called the Sagrada Família. And this was meant to be a cathedral church for the city. And he found some land outside of the city and started this church in an Art Nouveau style, all handcrafted, beautiful details, all in stone. They haven't stopped building that church for 100 years. It's still being built today. And you know what, Jack? It's probably going to be another 50 years before it's done. But when you see the intellect, the detail, the philosophy, the inspiration, and the workmanship of this church and this building, it's awe-inspiring because it's not just the imagination of one man. It's the imagination of a city. The city of Barcelona has adopted this project. In fact, the country of Spain has adopted this as a national project and a national treasure. And you know, it's a beautiful thing when so many people will get behind something like this. And they will allow this project to continue, and they will not dilute it. They will build it to the original specs and the original character that Gaudí started. And when you read the life of Gaudí and you study his philosophy, he uses nature to design his buildings. And the influence of trees and gardens and even the human body. And when he looked at structural systems and the bones of the human body and the fingers and the legs or the branches of a tree, the way they would hold up the upper canopy, he adapted those ideas into the architecture. And it's just a phenomenal thing for me to see as an architect. But you know what? I'm not the only one that's amazed by it. There were thousands of people there the day I was there, and they have lines every day visiting this cathedral.
Your firm, Victor Sirocki and Associates, have received over 50 design awards. You've designed hundreds of buildings, including the Birmingham Theater, the Townsend Hotel, Shenandoah Country Club, Rochester Royal Park Hotel. Which of your buildings are you the proudest of?
Well, it's hard to pick any one of them. And you knew I wouldn't do that, Jack. But the ones you've mentioned are beautiful buildings that we have a lot of pride in. And they've been important buildings in the cities that they've been built in. Other projects, the Merrill Park townhouses, Tribute Restaurant, all have unique design features that I think will make them classics. And that's really the test of a good building. Will it withstand the attitude of time? Will it withstand other generations and other uses? And you know, that's what we try to accomplish. And people say, what's the favorite project you're working on now? And I've got some great projects we're working on now, but the next one is going to be our favorite.
In today's world, the only constant is change. In today's world, you have to keep learning while you're earning. How do you do this?
Well, our education doesn't stop after we get out of school. In fact, it's really just beginning. That's maybe the formal education that we went through. But of course, we're learning from our clients. We're learning from the people we work around every day, our contractors, our suppliers. But most importantly, we learn from our exposure. When Michelle and I travel, we go to cities. We don't just go sit in the sun. We don't just go to beaches. We go to cities around the world, and we look at the way things are done. I'm always amazed by the architectural quality of other cities and other great buildings. And you begin to realize what influences those buildings have had in those communities and why they use certain materials. Maybe those were the natural resources. Maybe that was the technology that they had. But we always can learn from our ancestors.
We're talking to Victor Sirocki, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Crisula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Victor Sirocki, who now has 16 associates with him. Speaking of which, what makes a great architect?
Well, I don't believe there's an exact formula as to what makes a great architect. But some people will say it's maybe the legacy of the buildings they've designed. And what makes, then, great buildings? And I've always said that our best projects are a result of our clients. You know, I'm the same architect in the same architectural firm, and I've got winners that are batting 100, and I got some that are maybe batting 75. So I ask myself, well, what's the difference? And the difference has always been the owner. And a great owner with a great ambition, a certain drive, an excitement, wanting to do something special, pairing up with a great architect, a good architect, will make a great building. And again, it's knowing each other, understanding each other, knowing what's realistic and feasible, and reaching out a little bit more, maybe being a little adventuresome, stretching the ideas to make a space unique and exciting, because we want to create spaces that are memorable, and we want to create buildings that serve us in a very functional way, but yet inspire us. So if somebody can achieve that, then I would say they're a good architect, and the good architect will create great architecture.
What projects are you working on right now, and how's business?
Business is good, and it's good because we have a niche in the community, and we have found this niche. Our work is mixed use. It tends to be fairly high end, all custom. And we have developed a style and signature that has focused on the downtowns. We do a lot of work in the suburban downtowns. Obviously, downtown Birmingham is our backyard. We love the city. I've worked there from the beginning. I live there. And we socialize there. So we're doing a loft project in Birmingham that's very exciting over on Eden Street. The biggest project that we're doing right now, though, is in Royal Oak. And Royal Oak is, again, another suburban downtown that's experiencing a lot of growth. In fact, we're doing the largest project in the city. It's called Main North. And it's a series of three high-rise loft buildings that are mixed use, that are using retail on the first floor, offices, parking, and then 7 or 8 or 10, 12 stories of loft condominium units. And it's a very exciting project because it's very dynamic. It's creating a district. It's creating a place in the city. And we're actually extending the downtown north of 11 Mile. All the activity has been south of 11 on Main Street. And we're actually going to extend that downtown. So we are going to have a big influence in the growth of that city. This project is already very successful. The first tower is sold out. The second tower is almost half sold out. And we're still designing the second tower. So sales are good.
When we were kids, none of us had anything. We didn't miss it because you don't miss what you don't know. Today's teenagers, they have everything in these suburbs, and their friends have everything. How are you and Michelle trying to raise your children to have right values, etc.?
Well, of course, we have the good fortune of being of a generation that probably has more than our parents had, and our parents probably had more than their parents had. But you could still instill loyalty, value, qualities in children, even if you're surrounded by affluent things. It's important to teach our children the value of hard work. I got to where I am through hard work. I wasn't loafing around, sitting down, watching TV in the evenings while I was in school. I worked nonstop. I worked around the clock. And I still work hard today, and my children see that I work hard today. And quite frankly, architecture is part of our household life. It's part of our daily talk. Michelle's involved in the business. The kids hear the discussions. She emails me. She copies them. They see what's going on. They know I'm taping the show. They're going to ask me about it tonight. We're going to talk about all the things that we go on in our daily lives. So they see that, yes, we have had some success through hard work, but it always comes down to the same formula: a good work ethic, being honest, treating people with respect. Respect is a two-way street. And those are the things that we can instill in them, even if there is great influences around them.
If you were to give a talk to a group of college kids, what advice would you give those young people?
To follow their dreams, to look at what's around them, to talk to others, ask people about their careers, their professions, their lifestyles, their livelihoods, and to know that people will give you honest answers, just as your company is. Trust in us. You got to trust in people, Jack. And you know what? We trust in our owners, and our owners trust in us. And young people can still learn those things, and they can ask the questions, they can listen, and if they have trust, they'll fulfill their dreams too.
What role, Victor, has faith played in your life?
You know, Jack, I was fortunate to grow up in a household that was Catholic. I grew up in the Jesuit communities. I went to Jesu all the way from kindergarten to eighth grade, and from there I went to U of D High School, also with the Jesuits. And of course, they taught us some good religious values. But they taught us to believe in people. And, you know, I believe that you can always see the good in individuals. And if you are honest with them, they'll be honest with you. And if you extend an open hand, they'll extend an open hand back. We've done that with our owners. We've done that with our clients. We do that with our friends. In fact, all of our clients have become our friends because we have a dialogue, we trust each other, we work together, and we want to find the goodness in people. And you know what? It's deeper than we all think. It's very easy to find criticism. This guy's not paying me. This is too slow. I don't believe him. You know, you got to set those things aside and just say, let's work together. Let's do a good job. And again, just as I said earlier, working together is the most beautiful thing. You can create great things from it. That's where the greatest architecture comes from.
Ross Perot says, you manage buildings, you manage inventory, you manage money, but you lead people. You're a natural leader. What's the key?
Well, again, just as I said earlier, trusting in the people that you surround yourself around. You know, I have the associates and architects in my office, and I can't create all this work. I can't do all of this work. Much of the credit goes to them. We work in teams. We talk about the project. We work with the owners, and we develop a concept. We develop drawings. Ultimately, that hopefully will result in a good project for our owner. So again, it's just as I said earlier, I really believe that you trust in people, you give them the authority, and you'll many times be surprised on the outcome. So we all work together, we extract the best out of each other, we work hard, we work late evenings, we work weekends when we have to, because we know we've got to get the job done.
We've got 1 minute left. Is the American dream still alive?
Absolutely. It's probably better than ever. And you know, we hear of all these beautiful stories, but the opportunities are still out there. We travel all over the world, Jack, and every time I travel, there's no place like home. That's obviously an old saying, but we come back home and we say, look at the beauty of America. Look at the beauty of our communities. You know, I walk the streets in Birmingham, and I can walk the streets in Paris, and I can go to London, and I can go to Morocco, and I can go to Barcelona. But yet I come back to Birmingham, Michigan, what a beautiful little community, a suburb of Detroit, and I say, what better place can we live? Look at the quality of America. Look at the strength of America. Look at the people and the neighborhoods and the quality of life we live. There's no place better.
Victor, I want to thank you for coming on, sharing with us tonight. I want to thank you for the example that you set in this community every day by your actions rather than just your words. It's an amazing story. Our guest next Sunday will be the highest-ranking African-American in the history of the Big Three, Roy Roberts. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because anything is possible. Spohol.